The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hey, credit to the Browns winning three straight after many counted them out. But what is going on with the Cowboys? Marcus Spears, what bothered you most about this loss for Dallas?
Hey, listen, Els, don't tell me anything about Mike Nolan. Don't mention Mike McCarthy's name. Don't talk about Dak or Ezekiel Elliott. Talk about this lazy, soft, undisciplined defense that they playing in Dallas, which is going to cost them a playoff spot, and they are absolutely not good enough to challenge anybody in the league for a position in the playoffs.
I'm going to continue piling on. What if I told you that Cleveland ran for over 300 yards and over 7 yards a carry, and Nick Chubb didn't even play the whole game? The Browns' offensive line is great. Their run game is great. But that is one of the worst performances by a run defense I have ever seen.
One of the things lost in yesterday's game is how accurate Baker Mayfield was. This is who he was coming out of school. This is who he was his rookie year. The ball distribution, the placement, exactly where it needs to be, the confidence with it leaving his hand. This is the most accurate he has been since 2 years ago. And it's great to see. If this is the Baker Mayfield the Browns get for the rest of the season, this offense becomes unstoppable.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with what Mina just mentioned as well, that Browns O-line. More on that probably later in the week, but we welcome you to NFL Live. Dan Orlovsky, Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears here. We're going to tell you who we're picking in both games tonight. Chiefs, Pats, of course, and Packers, Falcons. That's coming later, but we begin with our top story in the NFL. The Pats and Chiefs shifting to tonight after Cam Newton's positive COVID test and after multiple negative tests for the Patriots, including tests this morning. They left for Kansas City this morning. Kickoff, of course, 7:05 Eastern tonight. You see one of their planes leaving or maybe arriving. I can't tell what it's doing. But either way, Adam Schefter is here. How do we arrive, Adam, at this point?
Laura, this was all triggered into motion by the positive test result that Cam Newton got over the weekend. Once that happened, the NFL wanted to test all the Patriots. The Chiefs had their own practice squad player, quarterback Jordan Tiamo, also test positive, and they wanted to test all the Chiefs players. And after the Patriots and Chiefs went through testing on Saturday and Sunday and again this morning, and there were no other negative tests, despite the fact that this virus is considered highly contagious, the NFL went ahead and the Patriots flew to Kansas City this morning, where they will take the rare and unusual step of flying halfway across the country to play a game that day. They spent the day in the hotel, napping, resting, getting ready for tonight's game against the defending world champion Chiefs. That's how they got here. Two positive tests, one on each team, but now there'll be a doubleheader tonight between the Chiefs and the Patriots first at 7:05, and they just pushed back the Packers-Falcons game, the second game tonight, 10 more minutes. It now is scheduled to kick off at 9 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, and we're getting you ready for all of it. While we're on this subject, Adam, what is the latest with the Tennessee Titans?
For the first time in 7 days, the Titans did not have a positive test this morning when it came to the most recent round of COVID testing. That is encouraging, because before the Titans can get back in their building, they would have to go two straight days, consecutive days, without any positive tests. You remember they had their game this weekend canceled. There were positive tests within the organization for six straight days. 18 members of the organization, including 9 players, tested positive over the last week. But today was the first day in 7 that there were no positive tests. That offers some hope and encouragement that perhaps by the middle of the week, the Titans could be back to work and be on track to play the game Sunday against the Buffalo Bills.
Adam Schefter with us all show long. Stay close. You got injury updates coming later on. Dan Orlovsky, you've traveled the day of a game before. You're shaking your head here. What are some of the challenges the Patriots may face?
We did this in 2006 when I was in Detroit. It was a preseason game, game number 3. But we flew out that morning from Detroit to Oakland. We landed at the hotel, and we stayed in a ballroom for 2-3 hours, had some lunch, whatnot, and then we headed to the game. We got absolutely dump trucked, and all I remember was the next day, our coach forcing us to watch the tape, and everything looked super lethargic. Our energy was low. We couldn't play. By the middle of the first quarter, it was like we were shell-shocked because we were so out of it. And so I think the huge challenge for the Patriots is, how do they start this game with their energy, and how do they keep their game with their energy? Because this was, for us, it was a brutal 24-hour stretch.
Yeah, sometimes being in a hotel with that hotel carpet and all that just really gets in your head. All right, Marcus, short notice for the Pats. Quarterback Ryan Hoyer getting the start in place of Cam. His skill set completely different from Cam Newton's, by the way. So why will this quarterback switch be particularly difficult for the Pats?
Yeah, Els, and to compound on what Dan said, now you add this into the mix. And listen, we talked about how New England was devoid of weapons. Cam showed up, and those weapons looked a hell of a lot better with what he was able to do from the backfield as a quarterback. Now you bring Brian Hoyer in. You lose a lot of your playbook as well. Josh McDaniels was doing a masterful job of not only getting Cam acclimated into this offense, but making sure his imprint and stamp was put on this offense to generate success for everybody else around him. Now you go back to more of a Tom Brady-esque plan where you want a guy to manage the game, distribute the ball around. Now the onus is on all of these skilled players.
Mina, we got a couple negative Nancys about the Patriots here. Do they have any chance?
It's an uphill battle, but I'll do my best to make a case for them. On offense, ball control offense, obviously, keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands. On defense, you're probably going to have to force a turnover or two. This secondary, which is the strength of the team, hasn't quite played to the level of last year. They've had success in the past using disguise against Mahomes, so you're probably going to see some of that. I think up front, if the Patriots win, a name you're going to hear a lot is Chase Winovich. Frankly, a name we should all be saying more often because he has been ferocious. I don't know why we don't talk about this guy. Maybe it's because he's not a first-round draft pick or looks like a long-lost Lannister cousin, but he is awesome. ESPN has a great statistic, pass rush win rate, which measures how often defenders beat their blockers in 2.5 seconds or less. Number two is TJ Watt. Number one is Chase Winovich. When he's double-teamed, he's been winning 50% of the time. He is that dude, and he's going to have to be that dude for New England to have a shot tonight.
I love that stat, Mina. I would go back to the offense for New England. It's kind of four parts for me. Number one, you got to turn it into an old school Big Ten football game, like 3 yards cloud of dust, 3 yards cloud of dust, 3 yards cloud of dust. And then you've got to be ridiculously good in third and short situations. Now, thankfully for New England, they're the number one offense in the NFL when it comes to third down and three or less conversions. So rely on that, because the number one goal for them is to try to give Kansas City like 50 snaps or less on offense. Patrick Mahomes doesn't lose a lot of football games. He's lost 8 of them. Every single one, the opponent has taken more snaps than he has in those games. That's the only chance for New England.
A reminder, the Chiefs have won 12 straight games, including the playoffs, their longest win streak in franchise history. Glad to have you on NFL Live. Carson Wentz showed the fighting spirit last night against the 49ers. No secret the Eagles and Wentz have been struggling, and the NFC East is abysmal, of course. But there were some moments last night against San Francisco where they looked like the Eagles of a couple years ago. One of them had a lot to do with this two-point conversion in the first quarter that you just saw there. So, Mina, I'm curious, are there analytics, are there numbers about why Doug Peterson would do something like that early in the game?
Not really. I mean, kind of, insofar as the Eagles have actually been better at converting on two-point attempts than the league average since Peterson and Wentz became a thing. But for the most part, I think it's more of an emotional thing. There's not really a numbers case to do it.
I think the Eagles win that game because Doug Peterson won back his locker room with that two-point conversion. I was critical of him last week with that punt decision at the end of the game, but they scored that touchdown, and it's like, hey, I'm going to send a clear message. We are going to win this football game tonight. And it wasn't only that. He was great situationally as well with the aggressive play calling that he gave that offense. They get down in the red zone. We haven't seen that this year. Carson Wentz on the zone read. Why? Because they're scared for him to get hurt. How about a little roll pass on third and one? Again, putting it in your quarterback's playmaking hands. Fourth and one. Let's go quarterback sneak. Let's not go to quarterback sneak. Now let's go back to quarterback sneak. This is a plan of a head coach that wanted to win. Fourth and four, let's get a rub route to a receiver that no one's heard of. And then second 18, let's take a shot to go win the football game. Quarterback, be good enough to make the perfect throw in the moment this season that you needed it. And so I've been critical of them. I've been critical of Carson Wentz, but it's a lot like a basketball player for me, guys. A lot of guys go through slumps, and they just need to see the ball go in the basket. And I think that second 18 shot by Carson Wentz to win the game just might be that for him in this Eagles offense.
Yeah, man, we still waiting on you to see the ball go through the basket. Listen, this is, what is this? Is this Jekyll or is this Hyde? Look, it's been this way. It's been that way. And Dan and I have talked about it, and Dan made a great point. Listen, your lows cannot be abysmal. Carson Wentz showed us what everybody wanted to see Carson Wentz show us. The first half of the Washington football team game, that was the Carson Wentz we thought we would get. I made a comparison to Carson and Jameis, and people lost their mind. It's because this is who he is at the top of his game. And he didn't break any records. He wasn't a world beater in that San Fran game, but he made plays. And the one thing about Carson Wentz that I've liked and admired about his game is he is a playmaker. He figures out ways to get out of binds. He figures out ways to make the plays in opportune times. And what Dan pointed to, making the right throw, making the right decision. If this guy was not different than what we've seen in the weeks prior, you haven't been watching football. This to Carson Wentz, the Eagles need.
Well, Mina, I realize that the 49ers are decimated by injury at this point, so that factors in here, but it felt to me like the Eagles' defense was kind of looking around in this game saying, well, wait a second, our offense has struggled. Let's take this responsibility on our shoulders.
You're absolutely right. I mean, for all the talk about Wentz, who did play better, loved what he did with his feet, it was the Eagles' defensive line that won them this game. They actually reminded me a lot of that Eagles' defensive line from the Super Bowl season. Getting pressure with four, coming in waves throughout the game. You know guys like Malik Jackson and Fletcher Cox are going to get pressure up front, but how about Jannard Avery or Derek Barnett, who is giving Trent Williams the business all game? So did Josh Sweat. If those Eagles defensive linemen can continue to play at that level, creating that much havoc without blitzing, they can stay in games. Carson Wentz doesn't need to be an MVP because that defense can be good enough.
Yeah, the Eagles need to get it together just in the nick of time because they got the Pittsburgh Steelers next week, and then after that, the Ravens October 18th. Certainly not getting any easier. Let's get to some quick reads with some other action around the league on Sunday. Mina, the Bills wide receivers caught your eye.
Man, a lot of love deservedly for Josh Allen, but this receiving group in Buffalo is a top three unit in the league. Stephon Diggs makes this play. That's a 50-50 ball. He comes back and gets it. Watch that Cole Beasley, man, on the touchdown coming up. Okay, so this is not a perfect ball. Acrobatic jump by the little man. I love how complimentary this group is with John Brown. They just all fit together so well.
Marcus, what about the Colts D?
Yeah, I'm going to bring it back to defense. Mina been giving defensive nuggets. It's the Colts defense. Fast, physical, quick to the ball, creating turnovers. And listen, guys, the acquisition of DeForest Buckner in the middle of this line of scrimmage, switching him around and putting him in different positions has absolutely made a difference. Now they have a guy on every level of this defense. The Colts getting after it.
Dan, not enough people talking about Teddy Bridgewater.
We got to start. Listen, this is the best word that I can describe Teddy Bridgewater right now. When? He knows exactly when to take the ball and push it downfield, exactly when to get it out of his hand to be a distributor, and then exactly when to be someone that uses his feet. He's executing this offense perfectly. He's got them at 2-2. Credit to Joe Brady. But Teddy Bridgewater, well done.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Latest around the league, what do we need to know right now, Shefty, starting with the post-game scuffle after the Giants-Rams game?
Yeah, that was something, right? On the field, you saw Jalen Ramsey and Golden Tate going at it at the middle of the field. Everybody surrounded them. They had gotten into it during the game. Some hard hits delivered by Ramsey, not compared to the ones after the game. And then I was told that Ramsey had to be restrained from going to the Giants locker room to go after Tate. I'm also told there will not be suspensions in this particular incident, even though the two players had to be separated during the postgame fight. No suspensions coming for Ramsey or Tate from the NFL. As for the Browns running back, Nick Chubb went down yesterday with an MCL injury that will land him on IR. In fact, the Browns already have placed him on injury reserve. I'm told he's expected to miss about 6 weeks, which will sideline him, obviously, right now into the middle of November at the very least, potentially more. And Austin Eckler is on a similar timeline after this hit. Watch how he let up after the play, and the Buccaneers defender comes in and hits him a little bit late after he let up. That resulted in a hyperextended knee, a serious hamstring injury, and Austin Eckler, I'm told, is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. And then today, the NFL held a conference call with all owners, coaches, GMs, in which it went over COVID protocols and reinforced the notion of what they are expecting. They also introduced new protocols and said that they're going to be implementing a video system across the league to monitor if people are and aren't listening to the protocols. And they even said that additional measures will be taken for teams that don't obey the protocols, and that potentially could even include forfeiture of games, Laura.
Wow. More Shefty on ESPN tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. Monday Countdown is where you can see him. Thanks so much, Adam Schefter.
Thank you, Laura.
Let's get to Tom Brady, the Bucs versus Chargers on Sunday. Justin Herbert, 2 years old when Brady made his NFL debut. That's fun. Okay, Brady was on fire in the second half, completing 15 of 17 passes for 263 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, a QBR of 99.8. He completed passes to 7 different receivers, including Scotty Miller, who hauled in 5 catches for 83 yards and a score in that span. And this was Brady's 28th win after trailing by double digits. That breaks a tie with Peyton Manning and Dan Marino for the most in the Super Bowl era, according to Elias. We told you about the great first half for Brady, but Dan, there was one moment in this game early that you think may have changed their entire season. What was it?
The pick six. It changes the course of the game and it changes the course of the season, because this is what their Chargers were doing defensively. Sitting there going, we're going to drive on the football. We don't think that Tom Brady at 43 years old is good enough to throw the ball over our head. And the Bucs said, not anymore, because the corner's sitting there watching, waiting. You're not going to throw the ball past me, and I'm just going to squat there. The arm isn't strong enough. And then the Bucs have decided to go, we're not going to let you think that way. And it became this bombs away parade in the second half, where it was shot after shot after shot. There's a stretch in the second half where they go 5 straight plays of deep balls. It starts with the Scotty Miller condensed split double move go route. Then they take a max protection shot to Mike Evans. It's incomplete. That's okay. The very next play, they'll come back and take another shot to Mike Evans. Give him a chance to go make the play downfield. He's that good of a receiver. They'll take a shot to Rob Gronkowski off a little flash fake play action. I want to remind everybody that when Tom Brady has been mentioned, often when it comes to passing game, people go, really efficient, dink and dunk, get the ball out of my hands. He averaged 13 yards per completion in the second half yesterday. This is a different Tom Brady. The Bucs are not going to allow teams to disrespect their offense because their quarterback is 43.
Brady's arm's fine. It was actually fine last year. I think concerns about it were overblown. The issue with him, the potential issue, has been movement, agility. You know, he's so good at navigating that muddy pocket. That's his calling card, which is why going into the season, my concern was not about the arm. It was obviously not about the playmakers. It was about the offensive line. And that's why, to my eye, it's been so heartening to see how well this Bucs offensive line has played. Look at that stat. leads the league in the lowest amount of pressures allowed per dropback. That continued this weekend. The rookie, Tristan Wirfs, at right tackle, was excellent against Joey Bosa. Now, they're helped, of course, by Brady. It's important to mention. Defenses are afraid to blitz him because he gets the ball out so quickly, which tends to inflate numbers for an offensive line, something you saw in New England as well. But don't be fooled. This offensive line is playing very well across the board, and that's going to be key to continuing this amount of production down the stretch.
Yeah, Mina, to your point, Bruce Arians following the game was like, yeah, we would have lost this game last year. Well, now you got Tom Brady, so that makes kind of a large difference when you're talking about winning and losing. Marcus, you told us last week that this was a statement game for Tampa. So what statement did they make?
Yeah, Laura, you get a few opportunities in this league to kind of find out about who you are. And sometimes that's not in a catastrophic loss. It's about how well are we gelling and moving forward. Because this is a progression, right? We talk about, like in the locker room, we talk about this quarter of the season, the first four games. How do we progress? We saw them go down. To Dan's point, we saw them go long. And Bruce Arians' plan and what he's liked to do over his career is push the ball down field. We saw Brady check down. We saw Brady use all of his receivers. We saw him be as good as we've seen him be. And we talked about the devoid of weapons that he had in New England last year, but that was the point. The point was get him around guys that can make plays, create separation offensively, and he'll show you why we call him the GOAT. And on the other side of the ball, you look at the NFC in totality. What team is as complete as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I'll wait. Green Bay possibly. But there's still some things left to be desired in their secondary. But Aaron Rodgers is putting up a crazy amount of points. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers needed a win like this. You know, through their first games, they're averaging 30 points a game. That's Tom Brady. Yes, he's thrown pick sixes, but he's also made comebacks. This is the team and going to be the team to beat in the NFC.
Now, I think the comeback point is a really interesting one because that was a big storyline for the Chiefs last year, right? And now we watch this Bucs team fall down, and it's like, okay, how are we going to respond? We haven't really been here with Tom Brady this season. Our defense is supposed to be good. And all of a sudden, it was like, one play at a time, guys. The composure and the leadership of Tom Brady brought this football team back, and now they know. Now they know we've been there. We can do it when we need to.
Yeah, we're just under 4.5 hours to Monday Night Football. Marcus mentioned that Packers secondary. Somebody here is not picking the Packers to win tonight. How about big man balling, Marcus? Who showed you something, these big men out there on Sunday?
You know who? Els, you know what time it is. Look, usually I'll talk about our athletic attributes. Now I'm going to talk about our man because everything for us is about the line of scrimmage. And you see Malik Jackson just a little scurry of pushing that ball back after the referee placed it down. We are fighting for every inch. They told you in the movie, it's every inch matters in a game, especially when you're that close to the goal line. Malik Jackson, shout out to you, man. That is a big man balling using his brain. Yeah, we use our brains too in this game as big men. The second one, Ndamukong Suh. Yeah, y'all remember that name. I know we talk about Aaron Donald and we talk about Fletcher Cox. Ndamukong Suh was the first of these hybrids that we thought would wreck the game, and he did. He went through, made a play. It was a bad handoff exchange. But you know what else got to happen? The big man got to be fighting through the line of scrimmage to get there and get that ball out. This is another part of that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. They got pass rushers up there. Ndamukong Suh, you big man balling. Shout out to my guys.
Say, bro, I know you don't think that I'm going to let you let that basketball comment slide.
Hey.
This is what I got to say. You probably think you're Shaq, and I would treat you like you were Shaq, but like Shaq when he played for the Celtics. Like, old man, Lord. Can't get up and down. The course Shaq, me, I treat you like I'm Hedo Turkoglu, maybe Dirk, Luka, step back, pull, pop.
Marcus 18 and 12. Face says it all.
Okay, Della Vadova.
Huge names under center tonight as Monday Night Football comes your way on ESPN. It's Aaron Rodgers and the Packers taking on Matt Ryan and the Falcons. The game kicks off now at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Coverage starting with Monday Night Countdown at 6 Eastern. For more now, let's bring in Lisa Salters from Kansas City. No shortage of question marks at wide receiver for tonight's Packers-Falcons game. Devontae Adams, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, all battling injuries. It appears one of those questions has already been answered before the players even arrive at the stadium. Lisa, did Packers fans get the answer they were hoping for?
Hey, Laura. Well, the Packers already knew they were going to be without last week's breakout player, wide receiver Alan Lazard, because he went on IR after having core muscle surgery last week. But they were hoping to get Devontae Adams back. Adams sat out last week's game against the Saints because of a hamstring injury and told me on Friday that he was making progress and was trending in the right direction. But this morning, Adams posted this tweet. It read, "Sorry, friends and fans, I won't be on the field tonight. I've done everything I need to do and proved I'm ready. But I guess I don't know my body as well as others." That tweet was deleted shortly after it posted, but it did seem to indicate that Adams is not happy with the decision to keep him off the field. The Packers do have a bye week next week, so that likely factored into the team's decision to keep their star wide receiver down tonight, giving him another 2 weeks to completely heal. So with both Adams and Lazard now out, Marquez Valdez-Scantling will be the only Packers receiver on the field tonight who has a catch this season. Aaron Rodgers will have wideout Darius Shepard, who has just one catch for 1 yard in his career, and Malik Taylor, an undrafted second-year player who has zero receptions in his NFL career. Laura?
Ooh, really interesting. Lisa Salters, we will see you on the game tonight. So time now for some game picks. Marcus, we're going to start with you. Let's pick Monday Night Football, Packers versus Falcons. Who you taking?
I was going to give all the reasons why I made this pick, but frankly, it's already been given. Listen, I'm taking the Falcons. 35-31. They cannot give up another lead. Listen, this offense, as much as we can talk about the Falcons and how bad this offense has been putting points on the board, they finally get it done. Aaron Rodgers cannot overcome missing all of these weapons.
I wish I was as brave as Marcus Spears, but I am not. I'm riding with the Packers. That said, I think the Falcons are going to be able to put up points on them, and that's what I'm watching for in this game. We talked about unbalanced teams and how the Bucs might be balanced. So far, while the Green Bay offense has been a buzzsaw, the defense is ranked near the bottom of the NFL in just about every category. I want to see if they can turn that around, if the two Smiths can get it going today. Show me something.
Yeah, Marcus, bold move, Cotton. I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. Five words, motion and play action pass. The Falcons defense struggles defending teams that motion a lot. They struggle teams that utilize play action pass. I expect Aaron Jones to be a big part of the Packers offense, utilizing him as a pass catcher. And then two more names, Tanyan and Sternberger. Watch for their tight ends for the Packers.
There we go. I don't know what Marcus is doing there, but I'm going to make my pick. Guys, I'm not brave either. I'm going Packers 31-28. I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to have a crazy play late in the game that's going to win it. And the Packers are going to escape from the Falcons, even though they're at home. All right, the other game tonight, Chiefs and Patriots, of course, now that we've got that. Andy Reid, just 3-7 against Bill Belichick. His teams have averaged, though, 27.6 points per game, the most among any coach squaring off with a Belichick coach team at least five times. So he's always making it close. Plus, only six teams have ever scored 40 or more points against Bill's Patriots, and Andy's Chiefs were responsible for half of those. Some news real quickly. Phil Yates reporting that Sony Michel, the running back, on IR with a quad injury, and Damian Harris, who had that hand injury, has been activated. Marcus, who you taking, Chiefs or Patriots?
I am taking the Chiefs because I'm not picking against them again. I'm taking them 34-17. Look, Brian Hoyer is playing quarterback. This playbook is going to be condensed, and Patrick Mahomes has figured out how to handle blitz and disguises as well as anybody I've seen in a one-year jump.
That's a great point. I hate picking against Bill Belichick, and I feel like he's going to get up to all kinds of shenanigans tonight, but I hate picking against Patrick Mahomes even more. Give me the Chiefs.
I'm going to take the Chiefs as well. I just don't think the Patriots have enough people to match up and play their man coverage. I'll throw out the difference maker in the game. Mecole Hardman for this Chiefs offense has a big night.
I'm taking Chiefs 31-17. I just think that Patrick Mahomes and that offense is going to be too much for a Patriots team that's been stuck in a hotel all day and has had a crazy week.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's get to the Browns and the Cowboys. Early third quarter is where we pick this one up. Dan Orlovsky, the Browns up big, 31-14. Baker Mayfield feeling it. And it's really nice to have Kareem Hunt on your team.
And when you get a push by your offensive line like that, Kareem Hunt makes the first guy miss, uses that speed to kind of turn that corner. Big finisher at the end zone.
Browns up 38-14. Let's go to the fourth. The Cowboys trailing 41-22, but Dak Prescott still making something happen.
Yeah, really good shoulder fake to just get the defense to settle, and that ball goes up and over those linebackers to Dalton Schultz before the safety gets there.
Yeah, this was about the time when you texted us saying, hey, the Cowboys kind of making it interesting, finding CD Lamb there in the corner of the end zone. They're trailing 41-38. This is crazy, okay? Browns possession. They just need to get something going here, and Baker Mayfield able to get to Odell Beckham Jr. Take a listen to OBJ describing that play.
It's funny. Kareem before the play, he's like, we just need 5 yards. Harrison Bryant, the rookie, is giving me advice and coaching me up, telling me to stay in bounds. I said, thanks, Rook. I turned the corner and everybody was blocking, and it just cleared, and I was about to slide. I just turned the jets on and got in the end zone.
My favorite thing that OBJ says there is, thanks, Rook. There you go. I love it. The rookie is telling him what's up. I know. Hey, listen, we're going to talk about the Browns at some point this week. We got to talk about the Cowboys right now. Dan, where does the blame lie for Sunday's loss?
Just as much with the offense as it does with the defense. I mean, if you look at this offense in the first half, they're average. They're the second to worst team in the NFL when it comes to turning the football over in the first half. They're middle of the pack when it comes to points scored. They're 24th. They're 24th in the NFL when it comes to scoring. Nine scores in 24 possessions. They're minus 43 in the first half. So everyone wants to kill the defense for the Dallas Cowboys, and rightfully so. But this offense needs to stop being cherry pickers. And then at the end of the day, when your offense isn't playing well, you need your coaches to pick you up. And the reality is the Cowboys have been outcoached as well. This plays a huge moment where they're going to try to start making their comeback with time left on the clock. Six guys up at the line of scrimmage for the Browns. You got to figure out if you're the offensive line, who's coming. Not all six can come. Now, the Browns do a little bit of a different thing. They bring both people off the edge. That's going to leave one of those free guys to come unblock to Dak Prescott. Zeke can't be right. But this offensive line, what are you guys doing? That's five offensive linemen blocking two defensive linemen for the Cleveland Browns. That is a credit to the Browns' defensive coaching staff. You schemed something up against the Cowboys, you took advantage of it, and you got home. So if your offense stinks, your coaching's got to be better. But this team is really bad.
I don't even know where to begin. All right, so Dallas has a top-heavy roster, and I wrote down all the highest-paid players by cap hit this year. Dak, imperfect, but I wouldn't blame him for the loss. The turnovers got to stop. Amari struggled a little bit at the end there with that route, but I don't blame him. Zeke Elliott, game-changing fumble. DeMarcus Lawrence, Everson Griffin combined for 0 sacks and 0 hits. Mm. Zach Martin, you're cool. Tyrone Crawford got manhandled at the line of scrimmage. You saw what they did in the run. Jalen Smith, where to begin with Jalen Smith? The missed tackles, the penalties. I mean, this is about the Joneses. You put this roster together. You decided to pay Jalen Smith and Ezekiel Elliott instead of Byron Jones and Dak Prescott. This ultimately falls to you. This is a poorly constructed team. They are not executing well, but it starts at the top.
I just want to say that Mina definitely slam dunked that little crumpled paper into a trash can ground somewhere in there. Yeah. Marcus Spears, I feel like you're being quiet here. Who is to blame for this Cowboys loss?
Oh, it's the defense. And listen, Dan makes great points about the offense, and Mina makes great points about the players not stepping up that's paid. This is about your manhood. Listen, I sat in D-line rooms for 9 years, and I listened to bad technique. I listened to not fitting right. I listened to coaches tell us that we need to get better from a technical aspect. Everybody at home, turn on the tape, and you will see grown men getting whooped for four quarters. That's what happened in the Cleveland Browns and Dallas Cowboy game. We can talk about points that wasn't scored. We can talk about turnovers and Dak and all of that. Turn the tape on. If you got DVR, if you can record and watch this game again, Dontari Pope, Tristan Hill, Tyrone Crawford, DeMarcus Lawrence, Everson Griffin, Jalen Smith, your manhood was taken yesterday by the Cleveland Browns. Now, you got two options, and I've heard this before too. You got two options. Either you fight like hell to get up out of the trenches and get out of that gauntlet and come prove to everybody else in this league that that was an anomaly. That was one thing that was gonna happen that's not gonna happen the rest of the season, or you gonna take it the rest of the season. Because I can guarantee you this, every team that comes in, offensive linemen and their run game will single all of y'all out and test your manhood.
There we go. Guys, breaking news right now on NFL Live that we are going to get to immediately. Adam Schefter tweeting this just moments ago, and we're going to put the tweet up on the screen, but it appears that Bill O'Brien has been fired as the Houston Texans coach, and of course, he's also the GM. We're going to see this tweet in moments, I promise, and we will end up reacting to it. Romeo Crennel is the interim head coach, I'm being told right now in my ear, and let's just go ahead and talk about this. Mina, what do you think in hearing this breaking news?
Well, you made a very key point there. Head coach and GM, and I would argue many of the troubles in Houston start with Bill O'Brien's work as the GM, perhaps more so than as a head coach. Obviously, starting 0-4 after you pay your quarterback the kind of money they gave to Deshaun Watson is not what you want. This did feel inevitable. I didn't think it was going to happen today, per se, but I'm not surprised on the whole.
You never want to celebrate someone losing their job, but at the end of the day, this is the best thing that could have happened. 2-4 Deshaun Watson. He decided to sign that long-term deal in Houston. He's a phenomenal player. He was going to be wasted under Bill O'Brien. This is the best thing that could have happened for him. They now get a jump start on who is the right coach to not only come in and lead the organization, but who's going to be the guy that takes Deshaun Watson to the next level, that makes him a Super Bowl winning, championship caliber accomplishment as a quarterback, because that's the type of talent he is. They're going to have to figure it out with their general manager and a head coach, but this is the best thing that could have happened to Deshaun Watson today.
Eric Bieniemy on line one. The Houston Texans page and Eric Bieniemy. I've worked with a guy that's already having great success that we've never seen, and y'all have a guy with all the similar skill set that can do a lot of good things that they've done. Listen, I am sympathetic and I'm empathetic to this, Dan. We have seen guys come lose their jobs from a coaching staff, from a player's perspective. We know what it does. We know that it's life altering and things change. But I always try to remind people when we on television, football, professional football is a bottom line business. Your results will determine your future. That's as a player, that's as a coach. When you do good, you get good things happen. When you do bad, bad things happen. So it's unfortunate for Bill O'Brien, but he understands this model. Eric Bieniemy should be on line one for the Houston Texans.
Dan, quickly, who else should be?
I would say Eric Bieniemy. I would say Brian Daboll. I would say Mike Furry, and I would say Arthur Smith are the first four phone calls.
Guys, the Texans, according to Phil Yates, spending $255 million in cash on their roster this season. That's the most in the NFL. And they owe their first and second round picks in 2021 to the Dolphins. There you see it. The breaking news from Adam Schefter. He's reporting that with Dan Graziano. The Texans have fired their head coach and GM, Bill O'Brien. We will have much more reaction right here on ESPN to this news, and we'll see you all week long on NFL Live.